Well, it's certainly good to be here. It's been a blessing to be here this weekend and enjoy the college study Friday night and Saturday, and just so thankful to be with you today, and thankful for the opportunity to work with you this week. Can we use this period as an actual class? Okay. Well, I would like for there to be a little interaction. We're starting here. There it is. So what we're going to be doing this week is looking at the book of Daniel, and I thought in this first lesson just kind of give an introduction, an overview of the book, as well as thinking particularly about how does this book help me in my life? What does the book of Daniel have to do with me? And we're going to go through, just kind of give an overview here at the beginning, and then we'll talk about that at the end. Here's a look at the Bible. You understand that the Bible is not one book. It's a collection. It's a library of 66 books, 39 books in the Old Testament, 27 books in the New Testament. The book of Daniel is a part of the section we call the major prophets. Anybody know why we call them the major prophets? Are they more important than the minor prophets? Why do we call them the major prophets? Yeah, they're just longer. And so Daniel is... I'm not really sure exactly why Daniel is included, because Daniel is about the same length as some of the longer minor prophets, but it's still in that category with the major prophets. Here is kind of an overall timeline of the Bible. And the book of Daniel belongs during the period of the exile, when the nation of Judah was taken off into Babylonian captivity. And Daniel and his three friends, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, I like to call them by their Hebrew names, better known as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, were taken off in 605 B.C., in what is the first deportation. There were a series of three, the final one being in 586. The first three kings, first one I gave you Saul. Who are the next two? David and Solomon. And we call this the period of the United Kingdom, not Great Britain, but the United Kingdom, because we know in 931... the kingdom divides into what do we call the northern kingdom? Israel. I'm making this interactive to make sure you're awake. So the northern kingdom of Israel and then the southern kingdom of Judah. Now, Israel, you'll notice, has a shorter line than Judah. And that's because they didn't exist as a kingdom as long. They were taken off into captivity by the Assyrians in 722. And then Judah, I said those series of three deportations, 605, 597, the great deportation, Ezekiel was taken, and then 586, Jerusalem was destroyed. Do you remember this promise that was given to David? David wanted to build a house for God. And you remember Nathan, the prophet, said, go do it. That's great. Good idea. God came to Nathan and said, you need to tell David that this is not my plan. First of all, I never told you at any time to build me a house. We only do what God tells us. And secondly, he said, you're not the one who's going to build a house for me. I'm going to build a house for you. And what he meant by that is that he would not fail to have a man to sit on the throne. He was making a promise that David would always have a son as king over Judah. Well, what do you do with this? Have you ever thought about that? I mean, this was a promise from God, and God keeps his promises, right? Every promise that God has ever made has come true. What do you do with this in 586. What were those captives thinking as they were being taken off into Babylon? Knowing that not only was their city destroyed, their temple laid in ruins, but there was no more king. There was no more kingdom. They were subject to the Babylonians. Look over at Psalm 89. We're going to read this psalm together. I think that this psalm helps us to understand why the book of Daniel was written and how the book of Daniel is relevant to us today. Psalm 89 is one of many psalms that praise the faithfulness of God. I think of all the characteristics of God, God's faithfulness is praised and lauded just about as much as anything else about God. And what he's praising about God's faithfulness here specifically, as you'll notice as we read, is the faithfulness to this covenant that was made with David, that he would continue to have a man to sit on the throne. But I want you to pay attention. I'm going to ask you this question after we get finished reading Psalm 89. There is a shift in the tone of this psalm. I'm going to ask you to tell me where that shift is. There's a definite break. See if you can't see that in our reading. I will sing of the steadfast love of the Lord forever. With my mouth I will make known your faithfulness to all generations. For I said, steadfast love will be built up forever. In the heavens you will establish your faithfulness. You have said, I have made a covenant with my chosen one. I have sworn to David, my servant. I will establish your offspring forever and build your throne for all generations. Let the heavens praise your wonders, O Lord, your faithfulness in the assembly of the holy ones. For who in the skies can be compared to the Lord? Who among the heavenly beings is like the Lord? A God greatly to be feared in the council of the holy ones, and awesome above all who are around him. O Lord God of hosts, who is mighty as you are, O Lord, with your faithfulness all around you. You rule the raging of the sea. When its waves rise, you still them. You crushed Rahab. Probably a reference to, or it is a reference to Egypt. You crushed Rahab like a carcass. You scattered your enemies with your mighty arm. The heavens are yours. The earth also is yours. The world and all that is in it. You have founded them. The north and the south, you have created them. Tabor and Hermon joyously praise your name. Those are two mountains. You have a mighty arm. Strong is your hand. High your right hand. Righteousness and justice are the foundation of your throne. Steadfast love and faithfulness go before you. Blessed are the people who know the festal shout, who walk, O Lord, in the light of your face, who exult in your name all the day, and in your righteousness are exalted. For you are the glory of their strength. By your favor our horn is exalted, for our shield belongs to the Lord, our King, to the Holy One of Israel. Of old you spoke in a vision to your godly one and said, I have granted help to the one who is mighty and exalted one chosen from the people. I have found David, my servant. With my holy oil I have anointed him so that my hand shall be established with him. My arm also shall strengthen him. The enemy shall not outwit him. The wicked shall not humble him. I will crush his foes before him and strike down those who hate him. My faithfulness and my steadfast love shall be with him, and in my name shall his horn be exalted. I will set his hand on the sea and his right hand on the rivers. He shall cry to me, you are my father, my God, and the rock of my salvation. And I will make him the firstborn, the highest of the kings of the earth. My steadfast love I will keep for him forever, and my covenant will stand firm for him. I will establish his offspring forever and his throne as the days of the heavens. If his children forsake my law and do not walk according to my rules, if they violate my statutes and do not keep my commandments, then I will punish their transgression with the rod, and their iniquity was stripes. But I will not remove him from him my steadfast love, or be false to my faithfulness. I will not violate my covenant or alter the words that went forth from my lips. Once for all, I have sworn by my holiness, I will not lie to David. His offspring shall endure forever, his throne as long as the sun before me. Like the moon, it shall be established forever, a faithful witness in the skies. But now you have cast off and rejected. You are full of wrath against your anointed. You have renounced the covenant with your servant. You have defiled his crown in the dust. You have breached all his walls. You have laid his strongholds in ruins. All who pass by plunder him. He has become the scorn of his neighbors. You have exalted the right hand of his foes. You have made all his enemies rejoiced. You have also turned back the edge of his sword, and you have not made him stand in battle. You have made his splendor to cease and cast his throne to the ground. You have cut short the days of his youth. You have covered him with shame. How long, O Lord, will you hide yourself forever? How long will your wrath burn like fire? Remember how short my time is. For what vanity you have created all the children of man. What man can live and never see death? Who can deliver his soul from the power of Sheol? Lord, where is your steadfast love of old, which by your faithfulness you swore to David? Remember, O Lord, how your servants are mocked, and how I bear in my heart the insults of all the many nations, with which your enemies mock, O Lord, with which they mock the footsteps of your anointed. Blessed be the Lord forever. Amen and amen. Did you see it? It's almost like two different psalms, isn't it? Where is the transition? Yep. It's almost as if these are two different people. The first man, the first author of Psalm 89, so confident and bold, praising God for His faithfulness. The second part of the psalm sounds like someone totally different. What's happened? God, where are you? You promised. What's happened to your promise? I don't believe he's lost his faith. But I believe he's very honestly expressing the feelings of his heart. As he, I believe the author, was in Babylon, and he was hearing the mocking and the taunting, our gods are greater than your God. And we can prove it. And so I believe that this question that is being asked in this psalm is why the book of Daniel was written. Why God gave Daniel the ability to interpret these dreams. Why God gave him these visions of what would come. This is why this was written. Because of the promise that was made to David and the doubt, the questioning. Not a total loss of faith, but at least the questioning in the hearts of the faithful. Where is God's faithfulness? Psalm 2. The Lord said to me, you are my son. This is a reference, by the way, to the promise made to David. He shall be to me a son. And literally, Jesus is God's son. And so Psalm 2 and other psalms like this that refer to the Son are speaking of this promise that was made to David. The Lord said to me, you are my Son. Today I have begotten you. Jesus is the only begotten of the Father. Ask of me and I will make the nations your heritage and the ends of the earth your possessions. You shall break them with a rod of iron and dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. That's not what we're seeing in Jerusalem in 586, is it? It's just the opposite. Babylon has come in and dashed to pieces like a potter's vessel, Jerusalem and the kingdom. And so we've got an apparent contradiction. It doesn't seem like things are right. The book of Daniel is 12 chapters. What you may or may not realize is that the book of Daniel was not written entirely in Hebrew. There are six chapters. Chapter 1 is written in Hebrew, but chapters 2 through 7 were written in Aramaic. Aramaic was the language of Babylon. And so these chapters were written in not only the language of Babylon, but in a language that all the nations could understand. This was pretty much the language of the empire, you might say. And these chapters have three very important themes found in them. Chapters 2 and chapter 7 both picture four world empires that are going to rise and fall before the everlasting kingdom. In chapters 2, we read about that image with the head of gold, the chest and arms of silver, the belly and thighs of brass, and then the legs and the feet of iron and iron mixed with clay. And we understand that to mean that the Babylonian kingdom is going to be followed by the Medes and the Persians. We see that even in the book of Daniel, that transition take place. Followed by the Greek Empire established by Alexander. And then by the Roman Empire. And we understand that in the days of the Romans, that this kingdom, this everlasting kingdom would be established. How does this answer the question of Psalm 89? And by the way, Daniel 7 has the same vision, just in a little bit different form with four different beasts. But how does this answer the question of Psalm 89? God's faithfulness. Has God forgotten the promise that He made to David? No. But it's not going to come right away, is it? Now, Zerubbabel, who led them back, was he in the line of David? Yes, Zerubbabel was. You read over there in the genealogy of Jesus Christ, in Matthew chapter 1, in Luke chapter 3, you find Zerubbabel there. Was Zerubbabel the fulfillment of the promises? What was he the iron that was going to dash in pieces these nations? What was Zerubbabel? Was he a great king? Yeah, he was just a governor, and a weak governor at that. When they came back, Jerusalem didn't even have walls. That didn't come until about 100 years later with Nehemiah. Jerusalem was no threat to anyone. Zerubbabel was no king. He certainly wasn't the fulfillment of this promise. No, the fulfillment of this promise was not going to come until these four world empires rose and fell by God's decree, by God's order. These things were going to take place until the promise that He made of this great everlasting kingdom would come to the seed of David. Chapters 3 and 6 have this common theme. Chapter 3 is where we read the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace. And Daniel chapter 6, when Daniel is in the lion's den. But the lesson is exactly the same. And the lesson is, if God's people are faithful to Him, He's going to protect them. He's going to be with them. And this too answers a question that is behind Psalm 89 and in the captives. Has God forgotten His people? Has He abandoned them? And the answer is clearly no. I think this is also seen in the book of Esther. When God providentially works through a girl to save His people and to keep His promise that He made to David. And so God has not forgotten His people. But really the center message of this section in Aramaic, which is really the center of the book of Daniel, is chapters 4 and 5, where we have two prideful kings, Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar, who were humbled. Nebuchadnezzar made to eat grass. We're going to read about him tomorrow night, Monday night. And Belshazzar. We'll talk about Belshazzar in the college devotion tonight. But both of these kings exalted themselves, which is what Babylon had done. Why did they come back with those vessels of gold from the temple? Why not just melt them down for the intrinsic value of the gold and use the gold? Why did they bring back the vessels? Yeah, those were trophies. In fact, we see that in Daniel chapter 5, where he's bringing all of these out so that they might drink wine from them. And the message inherent in all of this is our God is bigger than your God. And so those were trophies. Well, what God makes very clear in both of these stories is that He is over all. And you know who wrote Daniel chapter 4? Trivia question. It's not Daniel, by the way. Nebuchadnezzar. How many Gentile authors are there in the Bible? There aren't many, but one of them is Nebuchadnezzar. And at the end of this, you might call it kind of like a tract written by Nebuchadnezzar to be sent out to all the kingdoms. You know what Nebuchadnezzar says about God at the end? He rules. He's over all. And so this was not just a book to settle the minds of worried Jews in captivity in Babylon. This book is for all peoples. That's why I believe these six chapters specifically are written in a language that everyone could understand. So that this could be published throughout the kingdom so that God's glory, the one true God of heaven who rules over all, might be praised and extolled and honored and magnified throughout the kingdom. That's the purpose of Daniel. And so that means it has relevance to you and me today. It has much relevance. Here's just kind of an outline. We've already talked about chapters 2 through 7. We're not going to cover all of this week. But chapters 8, 9, and 12, we basically see what's going to happen in more detail. Now, we've got chapter 2 and chapter 7 kind of giving us the big picture. But God goes into more detail with these subsequent visions for Daniel, helping him see what's going to happen and even when it's going to happen in more detail, giving 70 weeks, the time that it'll take. And this is a really fascinating section where, for example, in chapter 11, we have this conflict going on between the king of the north and the king of the south. And I always need a little chart to read alongside of it to know what's going on. I mean, we've got six different wars that are described here in chapter 11. And we've got, I counted up, 19 different kings that are mentioned. Now, they're not mentioned by name, but it would be kind of like if someone were to use cryptic names for different presidents in the last century, you'd know, okay, that's JFK, and yeah, that's Ronald Reagan, and that's Bill Clinton. They knew who these guys were. They knew this history when they were, it wasn't history, it was prophecy, but when these things would take place, they would say, oh yeah, that's what God said was going to happen. That's exactly what God said was going to happen. They were reading history before history was history. They were reading exactly what was going to happen in these prophecies. It's really remarkable how detailed they are. And so the lesson, let me just, before I show you a preview of what we're going to do, the lesson behind all of Daniel is that God is in control. And really the hero of the book of Daniel is not Daniel, and it's not Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. The hero of the book of Daniel is God. Really, the hero of every book in the Bible is God. But we didn't want to say first God, second God, third God, fourth. You know, we name the books after the author sometimes or the main characters. But we all understand that Daniel and his friends were quick to say, this is not about us. I don't have wisdom, Daniel said in chapter 2, to give you this interpretation. The interpretation is coming from God. He is the revealer of mysteries. And He is the one who is in control. He is the one who is over your very life, Nebuchadnezzar. The only reason why you're sitting on that throne is because God put you there. And He'll take you down, and He's about to. And for seven periods of time, you're going to eat grass until you know that heaven rules. That is what the message of Daniel is about. And it's relevant to us living in Babylon. And that's going to be our first lesson in the series in the worship period. The lesson to us living in Babylon is that heaven rules. God is over all. Why do we need to be reminded of that? Again, we're treating this like a class. Why do we need to be reminded that heaven rules, living in Babylon? Yeah. There's a lot of injustice. There's a lot of kings and people who are in authority that take advantage of people who are doing the right thing. We need to be reminded that we will be rewarded for doing what is right, even if we're not rewarded in this life. Oh, is that the first bell? Okay. Why else do we need to be reminded that heaven rules? Yeah. We're suffering and we're being made fun of. And my topic yesterday in the college study was the last part of that series in Romans 5, 3 through 5, where he says tribulation produces endurance, endurance produces character, character produces hope, and hope, this is my topic, hope does not put us to shame. All these captives in Babylon were being put to shame. They were being taunted by their captors. Sing us the songs of Zion. Tell us about how wonderful your God is. We'll tell you how wonderful your God is. They were put to shame. We need to be reminded that our God rules. Don't listen to your professors, you college students, who ridicule your faith and tell you you're stupid to believe in something so simple, some fairy tale. It's not a fairy tale. This is real. And someday every knee is going to bow and every tongue is going to confess because it'll be obvious. But until then, we need to be reminded and we need to read Daniel thinking about the fact that it doesn't matter what they say or what they think about us. We know who we are. And we're not going to change who we are. I'm going to get another bell in a minute, so let me quickly go through. So we're going to talk about how to live as exiles in Babylon with this knowledge that God rules. We're going to talk about chapter 3 tonight, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And how we can survive in a postmodern world. That's what Babylon was, essentially. They worshiped many different gods. And couldn't understand someone who would say, you only worship one God. People don't understand us because we live in a postmodern world. Tomorrow night, the problem of pride, looking at chapter 4 in Nebuchadnezzar. What to do when you're thrown to the lions, that's chapter 6. How to respond in times of persecution. And then a lesson I threw into this series recently when I was asked to do a series on evangelism, and I didn't have a series on evangelism ready, and I said, can I just do the book of Daniel and talk about evangelism? And the book of Daniel has a lot to say about evangelism, and I'm really excited to share this with you Wednesday night. That's how we'll finish the series. Thank you for your attention.